Welcome to Don't Pass Me By with your host, Bob Wilson. That's me. We're on the Shake and Wake Radio Network. We have a great guest today, author Bruce Spizer. He knows all things Beatles, and he's been at it. Each of his books, each is better than the last. Bruce, what are you working on now? And please tell us about your esteemed collection and volumes on the Beatles.
Well, I had, started off by just doing a one-off book on the Beatles records on VJ, and that was going to be a little footnote in Beatles history. And people said, oh, when's the Capitol book coming out? So the next thing you know, I did these series of books focusing on the different record labels that released the Beatles music. And people might go, well, why focus on that? Well, because that's how me and many other Americans were exposed to the Beatles music. We bought records. And so that was the idea behind it. And during that series, I threw in a little number called The Beatles Are Coming, The Birth of Beatlemania in America, which kind of explained, how everything just exploded the way it did and was this convoluted story. And then Frank Daniels persuaded me to do a book with him called Beatles for Sale on Parlophone Records. And after that, I had retired. That was it. I was done. And then all of a sudden, we were approaching the 50th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper. I wrote a essay on that, nice little article, and I couldn't figure out where to place it because I just couldn't think of any magazines that would accompany it with the graphics and color photos and things that I wanted. So I toyed with the idea of putting out a magazine myself, but then realized I don't know how to do magazines, but I know how to do books. So thus, once again, a one-time book, this time on Sgt. Pepper, putting it in perspective as to what was going on from the fan perspective, because that's what I always was. And then, of course, when that book came out, people were like, well, you have to do the White Album. And, of course, I had to because that was my favorite album. And that gave birth to the Beatles album series books that I've been doing. The most recent one generally available for consumption is the Beatles Magical Mystery Tour in Yellow Submarine. And the one that will be next will be officially released on October 10, called The Beatles Rubber Soul to Revolver. However, that book is available now through my website for order at this time. So that kind of sums up what's out there now. And I'm, as we speak, working on the next book in the Beatles album series.
Well, that's quite an impressive body of work. The photographs and the printing on it are high end. The pictures are wonderful because of that. So even pictures you've seen before look new due to this. And it's comprehensive and they're really collectible. And it's really a nice set of books to have for any Beatle collection. If people want to order them, you said you have a website and also I guess they're on Amazon. Where do they go?
Website's easy. It's just Beatle, BEATLE.net. NET. And the advantage of ordering through the website is that the books are all signed by me. And if you care for it, they also can be personalized. We also wrap them in bubble wrap and then put them in sturdy boxes. So, if you order from another source, the books are not going to be signed and they may not be packaged to the point of where they should arrive in the condition. So, we don't try to compete with vendors that can offer free shipping because we don't have that kind of clout in negotiating deals. So we try to give people a little bit of extra in the service of them when they order the book. And that's the way we do it. And we greatly appreciate, of course, when people do order from the website, knowing that they do have other options.
Well, recently, I know you know all things Beatles, but I've been doing some research into the Paul is Dead rumors, and they came about basically at the time, I think, when the Beatles had stopped touring. But I came across one of your articles, too, that was put out on April Fool's Day, so I've given you a little intro there. Do you want to run with that?
Well, can we get back to that one? Because it is a lot of a fun one, but I think maybe we ought to start at the beginning rather than the end of it all. And of course, the Paul is Dead thing was something I had to cover in the Beatles album series because it was an important part of multiple albums, the first being Abbey Road. But the origins of the Paul being dead thing actually started in the UK and quickly died out. But back in early 1967, Paul's black Mini Cooper was involved in a crash on the M1, and the rumor spread that Paul had been killed in the accident. And fortunately, when people called Paul over at his home in St. John's Wood, he answered the phone and he was fine, and it was just a false rumor. Basically, what happened was Paul had lent his car to somebody, and that person had lost control of the car and crashed, and the vehicle was a total loss. But fortunately, the driver of the car was not killed. He was hospitalized. So this was not a case of Paul blowing his mind out in a car, as it were. But, yes, but Paul did have, in late 65, he was involved in a moped accident where he cut his lip and had his tooth chipped. But that was about the only real accident that Paul had been in. And certainly, the other weird thing about that was Paul was riding a moped, rented moped with somebody else, and it was Guinness Air Tyra Brown. And, of course, the crazy thing about that later on was that Tyra Brown would die in an auto crash later on, about a year later. And, of course, that led to a verse in A Day in the Life, the opening verse that John came up with. So, so those were the pre-U.S. rumors. And so, that kind of puts things there. But things went a little bit differently in the U.S. And as far as we can tell, the first published account of this rumor in 1969 was in a student newspaper of Drake University in Iowa. And there was a feature article by a guy named Tim Harper, and it was called "Is Beatle Paul McCartney Dead?" And it ran in the newspaper, the campus newspaper, the Times Delphic, in September of 69. And what Harper reported was what he had heard on campus. There was this conjecture that Paul may indeed be dead. And so, and that was kind of the whole thing. And the guy who wrote the story got the so-called facts from an editor of the campus newspaper who had had a conversation at his apartment with a woman whose name he doesn't remember, who told him about all the secret messages and Beatle albums that Paul was dead. So, it gets to be this kind of urban legend, as we would say now. And this is pre-internet, so it starts a little bit slower. The idea, though, was that Sergeant Pepper was, the key thing about it all. And this was this new Beatles. They took drugs. They criticized religion. They studied, with the Maharishi. They had this new sound. All sorts of other things was the idea. And, if you looked on the front cover of the album, there was a hand above Paul's head. And so that supposedly was a death symbol in either by the Greeks or American Indians. But the reality was that was just completely made up. It wasn't a sign of the dead by any means. And then there was this left-hand guitar on the Abbey Road cover that was at this graveside, supposedly. So obviously that was Paul's bass. Some people said, well, not only is it a bass, but it looks like the letter P. The article had certain things that were just flat out wrong, because they were talking about this left-handed guitar with significance, because Paul was the only left-handed person in the Beatles. Of course, Ringo was also left-handed, but the old saying, don't let facts get in the way of a good rumor. So, and then of course on the back cover, Paul's back is facing the camera and the others are faced forward. And then George is giving kind of this thumbs up thing. And if you look at his thumb, it's pointing to the line Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock. So obviously that would be the time that, Paul blew his mind out in a car in a motor accident Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock. So, this was kind of the whole thing, but it didn't stop there. Of course, we have to look at Magical Mystery Tour, and, Paul is the walrus, supposedly, and John even were later to tell us that. But remember, John wore the walrus costume, not Paul. And the walrus was supposedly the Viking symbol of death, but I don't believe there's anything to prove that is ever the case. And then in the booklet, though, for Magical Mystery Tour, it refers to four or five musicians. So what do they mean by that? Is there a fifth musician being the new Paul? Because one of the other Paul, or the original Paul's dead. And then, of course, the White Album, Revolution 9, has these sounds of a car crash, particularly when you play it backwards and you hear Turn Me On, Dead Man. And you know, and the weird thing about it is, if you do get your record, and I remember doing this as a kid, and spinning it backwards, and it sounds like Turn Me On, Devin, Turn Me On, Devin, and it really very, very, very spooky. You know, and of course, Glass Onion, John lies for us and says, here's another clue for you all, the Wallace was Paul, when it was really John. You know, and so, you know, and some of the other evidence in this article is, you know, that Paul was very flamboyant and he was dating Jane Asher, but then all of a sudden, you know, he's no longer marrying her. And you know, he goes off and he marries Linda Eastman. But the fun thing about the Campus Paper article was it got Linda's name wrong and referred to as his Jane Eastman. So, you know, and then, you know, once again, you know, Paul had a brother, Michael, who he could have assisted with the hoax. And, you know, you have these whole weird things. So, you know, once again, it's just a bunch of rumors out there and things that we take as fact that aren't fact at all. You know, the hand over the head, completely, you know, completely nothing to it. So that might have been it, just a fun little article on the campus newspaper. But then the next week, another student newspaper comes out at Northwestern Illinois University. And on this one, you know, once again, you know, clues hint at possible Beatle death. And so, you know, once again, you have somebody here, and the woman who wrote that article basically plagiarized the other magazine article. So, you know, now we've got these two articles in two different campus newspapers. No internet, that might have been the end of it all. However, we get to October, we're about a month later from when these newspaper articles start, and you have a disc jockey in Detroit, a guy named Russ Gibb, and he plays a couple of tracks from Abbey Road, and he opens up the phone line for listeners who can call in and rap, you know, with Uncle Russ. And so a guy calls in who's a student, and he says, a guy named Tom, and he wants to talk about Paul McCartney's death. So, of course, the disc jockey is, you know, what are you talking about? But the guy says, look, there are clues in Beatle records, and you need to play Revolution 9 backwards to get the special message. So this jockey in those days, you know, you actually had albums, and he grabs the album and puts the, you know, the White Album side four on the turntable. And he's told, when you hear number nine, to play it backwards. So he does. And to his amazement, you know, he hears this raised, turn me on, Devin, turn me on, Devin. And so, of course,
you do that very, you know, well. I just want to say, it sounds like.
Thank you.
You must and have then, practiced. Course, you know, astute at that.
And then, of course, you know, you got to look at Magical Mystery Tour, and you know that's got clues once again on Magical Mystery Tour. You know, listen to the end of Strawberry Fields. You know, where John says, "I buried Paul." And in reality, of course, John says cranberry sauce, but you know, you get the idea. And so what happens is they spend the whole show just going over these supposed clues and people are calling in. And, you know, once again, you know, maybe that doesn't go anywhere, but there's a student there at the University of Michigan, a guy named Fred Labor, and he heard the show on the radio and he thought, well, this is really wild. And as fate would have it, he had been assigned the task of writing a review of Abbey Road for the school's newspaper. And, you know, rather than saying, hey, this is a new Beatles album, I like Here Comes the Sun and something, and George's songwriting's really getting better, and Paul goes vaudeville again, and Knoxville Silverhammer, and there's this medley on side two, he got the idea, why don't I do something totally different? And so he gets down and goes through some of the Beatle albums and knocks out his so-called review and brings it to the editor. And the editor is so impressed with it, he says, look, look, we'll put a full page on this thing, and asks him, you know, how long did you take to write it? in La Bourse, basically says, well, it took me 90 minutes. It's the best BS I've ever written. So, you know, he knows what he's written isn't true. And the student newspaper comes out, and it's just, you know, everybody's grabbing multiple copies, and it's, you know, everybody's reading the whole thing. And the piece is called, you know, Paul McCartney Dead. And so, of course, you know, people are, you know, I mean, it ends with a line that might have, you know, thrown you a little off because, you know, it says at the end of it, Mr. Labor says it's all true. Well, you know, if he says it's all true, it must be, right?
Right.
And so, you know, the bottom line was the editor knew it was BS. Fred Labor knew it was BS. But, you know, when you open up something where someone picks it up and says, Paul McCartney was killed in an automobile accident after leaving EMI Studios, and, you know, the group was working on an album, and he says it was tentatively titled Smile. Oh, gee, I wonder where that title came from. Well, obviously, you know, Brian Wilson was working on a project called Smile. And so, you know, that whole thing comes in, and then Paul is found, and his head's decapitated. And this whole thing is, you know, the greatest hoax of all our time, and the founding of a new religion based on Paul as a Messiah. So, I mean, right away, he's, you know, he's putting in some clues and trying to make it straight, but he also has a side religion thing going on. And, you know, so anyway, what happens, of course, is when the news gets back to Abbey Road that Paul is dead, well, the three Beatles and George Martin want to keep it from the public. You know, after all, you know, this could affect sales. So the idea, though, is that Harrison buried Paul, and Ringo conducted the service, and John went into hiding for a couple of days, supposedly. And then John comes up, you know, John with this brilliant idea that they're going to get a new Paul, but they're going to release clues about Paul's death in their record albums. And, of course, Brian did not like this idea, and Brian was going to expose the plot. And, oh, wait, Brian dies. Ah, so now we know the truth behind Brian Epstein's death. And only now the Beatles and George Martin are in on it. And so they go ahead and they have a Paul lookalike contest, and they get a winner, a guy named William Campbell, and they give him plastic surgery. And during the plastic surgery, though, there's some things on his face that have scars. So, of course, he's going to grow a mustache. And then that way people won't see any of the scars and will be distracted and won't notice the facial differences. And so then they begin working on Sgt. Pepper, their new album, and therefore they scrap this Smile album. So what do they do with Smile? Well, they give it to Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys, of course, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, we didn't know that, did we? Learn all kind of fun things here. But the point about all this is there's enough little bit of truth to make you believe it. And that's why later on, when we talk about that little article I wrote, we'll talk about that technique. So
that threw me quite a curveball, by the way, but I'll get to that after you explain it.
Right. So now you've got John Lennon and George Martin working on Sgt. Pepper. And so, you know, the cover is a grave scene, obviously. The yellow flowers, the bass and the letter P we talked about earlier, the gatefold cover. The fake Paul, his sleeve says OPD. What's OPD stand for? Officially pronounced dead.
Oh, well, everyone knows clue. That, of course.
Right. And of course, he's wearing a British War medal, so that would be honoring the dead who fought to save their country. And then on the back cover, as we mentioned, Paul has his back to the camera. Of course, a day in the life, you know, is the accident that Paul died in. And also, it's a new group, right? You know, it's the one you've owned for all these years, yet it's Sgt. Pepper. It's not the Beatles anymore. And then, of course, George Martin, the secret composer. Certainly George Martin wrote When I'm 64. That would have been something George Martin would have written. Later, of course, George Martin wrote Maxwell Silverhammer. Of course. So, you know, once again, magical mystery tour. All kind of clues. The hand above Paul's head, that mystic symbol of the dead. And then there's a picture of Paul in the booklet that says, I, you, was. Oh, so that would mean he's dead. And then there, you know, other shots of policemen and surgeons who would have been involved, of course, in Paul's death. And then there's a page where Paul is wearing black trousers but no shoes. Well, aren't people buried without shoes? I don't know, but if you say they are, I guess so. And then, you know, there are these shoes that are by Ringo's drums. And, of course, that's a Greek death symbol to show just a pair of shoes. And then Paul is wearing a black carnation while the others have red ones. And so in Magical Mystery Tour, what is the group doing to do? They're dying to take you away, right? The Fool on the Hill's perfectly still. Well, because he's dead, right? He has a foolish grin, as a dead man might. In Blue Jay Way, you know, once again, all these mystic religion ideas. And then I Am the Walrus has the death passage from King Lear. And, of course, we all know walrus is Greek for corpse. But, of course, it's not. But if you say it is, it must be, right?
Yes, sir.
And then, you know, what is this religion, though, that John is bringing us? What is that message? It's all you need is love, right? So then, you know, this is where it really, you know, it gets totally crazy. Where Labor, I think, at this point, has to be thinking in his mind, I may have him up till now, but now I'm going to go so crazy, they probably won't believe me. And he starts talking about the fact that Paul was gay. And in Yellow Submarine, if you listen carefully, you're going to hear somebody say, Paul's a queer, followed by I Captain. Well, the I Captain part is true. Once again, give the reader something that's true with something that's made up. And so the good thing about Paul being gay was you didn't have to worry about girlfriends, right? So therefore, and then Jane Asher, what about her? Well, she was paid to keep it a secret. And then Paul marries Linda, and Linda's, you know, Linda wouldn't know that it's the fake Paul she was marrying, right? So, you know, so now once again, and then of course, eventually they have to work this new person into the group, and he's allowed to actually sing on Lady Madonna, but it sounds so different from Paul that some people think it's Ringo. Why does it sound different? Because it isn't Paul, of course, right? Okay. And then it gets more. We have the White Album. It has this white cover, and that's John's godlike image, this whole thing of he's doing here. And then the collage poster has Paul lying in a pool of water. Actually, he's lying in a bathtub, and half his head is missing. It's underwater in the bathtub. Nonetheless, very significant. And then supposedly, you know, there's a passport picture in that collage, and supposedly that's William Campbell's passport picture. And then why did the Beatles do Back in the USSR, this Beach Boy-influenced song? Well, they're thanking Brian Wilson for working on the Smile Project for them. And then in Dear Prudence, John, he's actually not talking to Prudence. He wants Paul to open up his eyes. He's dead, so open up your eyes. And, of course, we all know that Prudence was John's nickname for Paul, right? We all knew that. And then, of course, Revolution 9 with the chaos and the term the undead man. So that gets up to Abbey Road. So far, Labor's review of Abbey Road hasn't mentioned Abbey Road. So now he comes into it and says, the title Abbey Road is very important. Why? Where do monks live? They live in abbeys. And then if we look at the cover, John's in white. So he's this godlike figure. Ringo is dressed like an undertaker. Paul's barefoot. Obviously, he's dead. And the cigarette's in his right hand, but isn't Paul left-handed? Obviously, the new Paul doesn't know that. And, of course, George, who's just wearing blue jeans, well, he's a gravedigger, because gravediggers obviously wear blue jeans. And so when they're walking on the cover, did you know that that is really not EMI Studios? That is actually a cemetery they're walking away from. So I know a lot of people didn't know that, but they're walking away from a cemetery. And Paul is being led out of the tomb, and he's conquering death, of course, with a little help from his friends. What is Maxwell Silverhammer? A Song of Justice. Octopus's Garden? Well, did you know that's slang for where officers are buried when you bury bodies at sea? That's called an octopus's garden. Did you know that? Well, it's not true, but it sounds good, doesn't it?
Yes.
And yes, and then of course, you know, I want you see so heavy. Why is Paul so heavy? He's dead, he's underground, and John is trying to pull Paul out of the earth. And then of course, side two with that medley in relationships, and all of this is about more religious things. And boy, you've got to carry that weight a long time. And then of course, the message of all you need is love, John's religion. The love you take is equal to the love you make. And then just for a laugh, they make a joke about the Queen. And the way he ends it is he says that the Beatles are building a mighty church. And when you will emerge from it, you will be laughing. Because Paul is the son, spelled S-U-N, I guess for Here Comes the Sun. Paul is the son of God. And that's the article. Now, if we read that, wouldn't you kind of wonder if this is all true? But nonetheless, people are buying it hook, line, and sinker. And even though Labor has made up dozens of fake clues, people accept them back. You know, you can't, fact, you know, you can't go on the internet and Google walrus to see if it really is the Greek word for corpse. And there's no internet. So it sounds good. And I think hearing "Turn Me On, Dead Man" probably caused many people to, you know, think of things, you know. And, you know, so if someone says at the end of Strawberry Fields, you're hearing "I Buried Paul," I guess you do. And at the end of "I'm So Tired," supposedly you're hearing, you know, "Paul is dead, miss him, miss him." Now John's just mumbling, but if you're in your mind, you're hearing that, maybe you do. So anyway, this thing spreads from campus to campus. No internet, but we had the telephone in those days. So people, "Hey, guess what I read in my college newspaper?" And they start telling people about it. And the next thing you know, it's just the big thing that people are discussing on campuses. And other students hear about it and become other, you know, people to put forth this John, you know, Paul is dead thing. And then, you know, it gets from mid-America to the East Coast and the West Coast. So you've got New York where WABC, WMCA, they're all doing the Paul is dead rumor and they're talking about it on their shows. And then major newspapers, the Chicago Tribune, the Chicago Sun-Times, the Washington Post, the New York Times, ABC runs a story on the evening news. Local stations are getting into it. And so, you know, and I remember, I'm from New Orleans, and I remember my radio station, WTIX, starts with it. And they realize, you know, that this thing is a rating bonanza. People want to call in about it, talk about it. They want to hear about it. And so the station is told by a promo man who goes by their plugging records, "What you guys need is a theme song." And so a station manager says, "Well, okay." And so this promo guy recruits a New Orleans R&B singer, Lenny Capello, who had had a couple of hits like "Cotton Candy" and "90 Pound Weakling," and gets him to do a song. And he does this song called "Brother Paul." And that gets on WTIX, and it's a big hit, and they press copies of the record in Nashville. And, you know, and I remember hearing the song, and I had the 45 from when it first came out, and it opens up with the wonderful lines, "Brother Paul, I'm crying. Are you really lying? Every night and day beneath the cold and lonely stone." And so it's not just New Orleans where these songs come out. You have a group in Baltimore that does a song called "The Ballad of Paul," and they call themselves the Mystery Tour. Lenny Capello's fake name that he used was Billy Shears and the All-Americans. And so so you've got another one where, you know, the one by the Mystery Tour talks about, has, you know, "Has Paul left this world? Has he taken his last breath? Have John and George and Ringo told us the truth?" You know, we've got that going in. And then, believe it or not, there is another artist whose name is Werbly Finster. And he does a song called "So Long, Paul." "So long, Paul, we hate to see you go. So long, Paul, after making all that dough." Well, Werbly Finster was not the guy's real name. Do you want to take a guess on who Werbly Finster was? And I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
He is a flamenco guitarist who had a hit with The Doors Light My Fire.
He's the guy with the sunglasses. He's blind. His name is
Jose Feliciano. Yes.
It took me a second, but the clues I got.
Yeah. And then Capitol re-releases a single by Terry Knight, who would later manage Grand Funk, called St. Paul. And it's just about his meeting with Paul McCartney in 1968 to discuss being, you know, an Apple artist and all that other stuff. But nonetheless, Capitol re-releases that single and claims it's full of clues. So, you know, now you've got radio, you know, making a big thing behind it. So, you know, that's where it gets kind of fun. And, oh, yeah, there was another group where by the Tree People called We're All Pallbearers. So, you know, you kind of get the idea. And, of course, you know, these records really weren't big sellers, although Brother Paul did sell fairly well in the New Orleans market. That I do remember. I know I certainly bought it. So, you know, now you've got all of this going on in the U.S. and people truly believing it. And Paul is informed about it by Beatles publicist Derek Taylor. And he finds it kind of silly and he doesn't really, you know, do anything about it. You know, he comes out and he says, look, you know, I'm alive and well. If I were dead, I'd be the last to know. And makes a joke out of it, and then he heads off to Scotland at the farmhouse. And so because of it, all of a sudden, no one can get in touch with Paul. And, of course, that makes the rumors go even more. Rolling Stone, thank goodness, though, tells us in November that Paul is not dead, and that's good to know. You know, but once again, you know, you just have these nasty rumors going along, and they just won't go away. Now, who was happy about these nasty rumors? Capitol Records. Because people were rushing out.
Sales going crazy.
Oh, they were, because, you know, if you didn't own the White Album or Abbey Road or Sgt. Pepper, you know, Magical Mystery Tour, you had to go out and buy those albums to get the clues and see them all. And so, you know, and that's the whole kind of thing. So it just really, really takes off. And of course, you know, a bunch of clues that people find on Abbey Road. You know, there's a Volkswagen Beetle on the street and the license plate. You know, when you look at that license plate, it supposedly means 28 if McCartney were alive and, you know, all that other fun stuff. So, you know, and it's just, and then, you know, the others, some other people are saying, well, LMW, maybe that means Linda McCartney weeps. But of course, she didn't meet Paul after Paul supposedly died. So, I don't know why she'd be weeping, but once again, you know, don't let a fact get in the way of a rumor. So that's kind of the long-winded story of it all, and all of the fascinating things. So I'm sure you have a lot of follow-up questions for it, but keep in mind, all this happened without the internet.
Well, that's amazing, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it brought it home to me. I didn't think of that when I was thinking it over. That's a great point. And that was an expert synopsis. So I applaud. That was like a wonderful, the best synopsis I've heard on that to date. But I have to ask a question. This guy, Fred Labor, went on to be a country swing singer. Because I tried recently to get in touch with him. I called his management and I left a couple of messages. Naturally, he hasn't gotten back to me yet. But he went on to become like a fairly, like he made, you know, he became a millionaire in country swing music, and they kind of ham it up with the costumes that they wear. And he's also, I learned, a bass player. So he went on to become, you know, basically a musician in his own right.
Yeah.
of some note, you know, he became a millionaire out of this. They still played up until very recently. His Facebook site hasn't been touched in about a year, but I think they took a COVID break from what I could gather. He seems to be alive and well somewhere in Nashville or Michigan. Anything
else?
Wouldn't
it be ironic if we started a Fred Labor is Dead campaign?
It would serve him right.
And took his songs and started finding clues in his music to show he's actually dead.
We should do that. He would have it coming, I say. But
I suppose. I think he might even appreciate it in some sort of strange way.
And he's got a walrus mustache, you know. You got a big
Well,
walrus
and
neck.
here's another clue for you all. The walrus was Fred,
I like it. Now,
who is dead.
as this is going on though, and like, I don't think they started it. I don't think he was dead, et cetera, et cetera. But when this started and they were getting such a rush of publicity, could they have kind of encouraged it a little bit because record sales were up? And I mean,
I don't think the Beatles did anything to encourage it. They need to. They just sat back and let it happen, you know. I mean, you know, it
sure.
didn't, you know, these clues were, it wasn't like they were coming out with new clues and people were finding them. I mean, and I found clues that I hadn't been told. I mean, you know, if you take the Revolver album and you turn it on its side, Paul looks like he's lying on a slab looking up in the sky like he's been buried. None of the others do. And if you take Yesterday and Today, and never mind the Butcher cover, but just the trunk cover, and you turn it on its side, Paul looks like he's lying in a coffin, and Ringo looks like he's closing the lid, which makes perfect sense because, as we know, Ringo is dressed like a funeral director on the cover of Abbey Road, right?
Yes, sir. But as all this is going on, and they're getting a big hype out of it and such with the record company. I did the ones that stand out to me where I wondered if they did them on purpose, especially where I know cranberry sauce isn't I Buried Paul, but the other ones like on the White Album, some of them do sound pretty clear. Like they don't sound like a tremendous stretch. Like how much of a
Well,
coincidence? How hard is it to get a legible sentence backwards? Like could any of those have been put on intentionally?
that was something I kind of wondered, you know, because look, first of all, the number nine thing, it was just a studio voice, you know, or something, you know, test pressing number nine. So John put it in a loop. So it wasn't like someone was going number nine 20 times in a row. He just took number nine and put it in a loop. So that's why you hear it multiple times throughout the song. In all likelihood, the original tape only had number nine said one time. And it was pulled out of the Abbey Road archive, you know, library of sound tapes. So, you know, I just think it's one of those coincidences. But, you know, let's get back to what you had first asked me about that little article that I wrote.
Yes, sir.
So, and I hate to give a secret away so early, but you know, I've kind of hinted on it. But Goldmine Magazine contacted me many years ago, and they said, "How would you like to write something about the Beatles for our April Fool's Day issue?" And so the first thing I thought about was, "Gee, wouldn't it be fun to do something on the Paul is Dead thing, but do it from the angle that the Beatles were truly behind it, in that, you know, me living in New Orleans and being, a semi well-known or whatever Beatles expert, that, you know, Paul was in New Orleans at that time for the Super Bowl, which was in New Orleans. And what if Paul and I had gotten together and Paul had one too many and let the cat out of the bag, so to say?" And so that was the premise it was written in, of stating that, essentially I had interviewed Paul, and Paul had gotten a little bit drunk and had basically admitted the fact that the Beatles were behind it. And it was written very plausibly, as, you know, like Fred LaBour's, in the sense there was a lot of things in there that were true. For example, the idea was that, pointed out that Brian at this time was looking for, you know, the Beatles to, you know, come up with these, you know, great hit records. And so he goes to the studio in April of 66 or whatever, and he hears the Beatles' new songs, Paperback Writer and Rain. And he's horrified by this because these aren't your typical love songs, and is concerned whether anybody's going to buy this. And then it gets worse because the Beatles tell him, "Look, this is our new direction, and we're going to be doing entire albums like this." And so Brian is concerned, well, you know, are people going to buy their records? And so they and Tony Barrow and all, they come up with this plan that what they're going to do is plant clues and pretend that one of the Beatles was dead, And therefore, if their new albums aren't selling well, they can let the clues leak out, and then people will go buy the albums to see the clues, you know, as if the Beatles needed a safety valve to sell albums. You know, and in it, there's these ironic little bits of truth where, like, you know, I get a quote from Tony Barrow. I think it was Tony Barrow who I used for it. And Tony, you know, that PR guy. And Tony Barrow says, well, you know, for many people, their careers didn't really take off until they were dead, you know, such as, you know, Ritchie Valens or Otis Redding or Jim Croce, you know, nothing like, you know, like a death to really help sell records and get your career going. And so, you know, and I start putting in all these different things and discussions and all the deliberate things they were doing. And there was enough truth in there to where you could believe it. And where I think some astute readers of it might have realized I was playing along was when we talked about the recording of, you know, to get Turn Me On Dead Man. And the idea was that they had recorded Turn Me On Dead Man, but were trying to make it sound like something else. But when they played it back, it came out to, you know, thermonuclear. But eventually they said, Turn Me On Dead Man just right. So when they played it backwards, it came out as number 9, so they could use it, you know, and things like that, you know. And I mean, just things that obviously, if you thought about it, couldn't be true. Nonetheless, Goldmine got letters from people that thought it was true. And, you know, and even people were contacting me like, wow, that's really great. Guy, you know, you got Paul to admit it. And it was really cool interviewing Paul. And so, and I had it on my website, and people would go to the website and read it and believe it. So we had to put a disclaimer at the front of the article saying, you know, please be sure to read the box at the end of this article. And then when you got to the end, it said this story was published on April Fool's Day in Goldmine Magazine. You know? So, but I still get people that believe it's true. It's amazing.
Well, I must confess, the other day I Googled and I was looking for some of this stuff. And they had reprinted the article on an April 15th, I forget which year. So it didn't appear to be April 1st, April Fool's Day as I looked at it. But I had, you know, so it took, as I was reading it, I went with it as I read it. As you know, I sent you an email, which led to the show. But you graciously came on and gave such a wonderful synopsis of all this. But I just, you know, it's not so much that they needed the money. You know, but it was just like they are practical jokers. And at some point in this, they did stop touring. I thought perhaps they were bored and they played along with it a bit, you know, for fun. And it
See, I just don't think they did. You know, in the article that I wrote, you know, the satire piece, you know, Mal Evans, you know, sat around with a bunch of college students and leaked a few clues. And, you know, that was all it took. You know, so, you know, once again, you put in something in there. Oh, yeah, well, Mal Evans, certainly that must be true. So, you know, and when people ask me that, you know, did the Beatles come up with this plan and all these clues? And it reminded me, do you remember when Coca-Cola changed their formula about 20, 30 years ago or whatever?
That was a day that rocked my world and lives in infamy.
Right. It was the new Coke. And so, and people hated it and they were furious with Coca-Cola. So Coca-Cola had to go back to original Coke. And the CEO was asked at a press conference by one of the reporters, did you deliberately, to drum up sales of Coke, launch this Faw Coke that you would later replace with the original Coke? And his answer was, trust me, we're not that clever. And, you know, meaning we made this mistake. We're not that clever. And I think that's the same thing with the Beatles. They were extremely clever, but I don't think the Beatles sat around planning clues on their albums, particularly since a lot of the clues really aren't clues. You know, as we talked before, you know, if you look up and see if walrus, the word for corpse in Greek, it's not. And they're just a lot of made up clues. So many of the clues are totally made up. And, you know, we can't say the Beatles planted those, certainly. I think the one that people might, you know, think most about was, you know, Paul puts on this black carnation. and the others were wearing red carnations. Paul claims that the flowers arrived in a box, and one of them happened to be black, and he just grabbed it. Why one would have been black, I have no idea. But that supposedly, yeah. I mean, there are other fun rumors on Sgt. Pepper, you know, that the leaves on that album cover look like marijuana leaves, but they're not. It's a pepperana or something. It's some, I forget the exact name, but it's a type of flower that has pepper in it, oddly enough. You know, and when the rumors came out that there were, you know, marijuana plants on the cover to Sgt. Pepper, Capitol President Alan Livingston, when I interviewed him about that, he said, look, you know, who am I to kill a good rumor that's helping sales? So,
well, out of all the clues, some of them are silly, but like the left-handed guitar does kind of look like a grave. They did pick a left-handed guitar. Ringo didn't play the bass, and it does look funny with the fella's hand over his head. And OPD
it
was,
does, but that doesn't. But of course the OPD is really PPD.
OPP.
And so it's not OPD. If you look at it carefully,
what is it? Ontario Police.
Ontario Police. It's OPP. Ontario Police. Perfect, I think. Or Ontario Police Precinct, one of the two, I forget which. And my good buddy Pierce Hemmingson, who's up in Canada and contributes the Canadian chapters to the Beatles album series books and is quite an expert on the Beatles in Canada, he actually sent me an OPP patch, which was very cool to have. And it's the exact thing that Paul has on his sleeve. But because of the camera angle and part of the, sleeve folding, it does, if you want it to be OPD, it certainly can be OPD.
Now, that's something that surprises me, that nobody went on to sell those patches, that nobody came up with even now a website with the Paul is Dead patch. But, I mean, the guitar looked like – I think Sgt. Pepper to me was the one that looked like, from a layman's point of view, not an in-depth study, that, you know, they might have been goofing around. Just because of the left-handed guitar, the hand over his head, he's backward on the, you know, the back cover. So it is all tongue in cheek, but I thought, you know, perhaps they were bored and they're practical jokers. And then the other clues, as people started looking into that, you know, people's imagination start to play with them and then they play with it. But the other one that got me, as you had mentioned, Ernie, the backward masking stuff, because some of it isn't what they said they were saying. But the turn me on, Dead Man, I didn't know what went into putting a backward message on. And I tried to ask a musician.
I just think it was a pure coincidence because, as I've said, you know, it's just being, you know, like number nine, whatever. So that the problem with, you know, stating that it's, you know, anything more than that, I think is a bit of a reach. And think of how hard it would be to do that intentionally.
That's what I was wondering. Like, I tried to ask a musician and they befuddled me with their answer. I didn't totally grasp it. How hard would that be?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, unsure.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, it's just something that is extremely difficult to do. And, you know, there are certain things you can do with backwards masking, but normally it's a case of you recorded something and then you play it backwards. When people listen to it, they don't know what you're saying, but if they were to reverse it, they'll hear it. So, you know, that's kind of the way it works. So, you know, in my mind, at least, I just don't think you know, and I don't know if anyone's ever tried duplicating it, you know, to just go number nine and play it backwards. I'm sure people have, to see what it sounds like. And it may be just the way the inflection this guy used. It sounds like that. The other thing to keep in mind is if you know going in, it says Turn Me On Dead Man, you're going to hear Turn Me On Dead Man a lot more likely. And by that I mean, if you listen to the Rolling Stones album, Their Satanic Majesty's Request, at the beginning of She's a Rainbow,
that's a far cry from the title like Meet the Beatles.
Yeah, and this is a carnival barker. You know, step right up, you know, and you listen to him. And to me, for some strange reason, it sounds to me like, you know, Ryan's anything you like. To me, it's all of a sudden like, you know, Are You All Ready? The Beatles song. And then She's a Rainbow, which would be from that time era, a typical Beatles type song. But he's not saying, "Are you ready?" the Beatles song. But if you listen to that after this show and you pull the album out and you're listening in your mind for him to say the Beatles song, maybe you'll hear the Beatles song. Just try it and see if it works. I know with me it works, but it may not work with you or your listeners.
No, and
but
how
I
do
think
you
part of it too is, you know.
We have about 6 minutes, so I wanted to ask a question and then have you plug everything again so your books get an extra nod for your great presentation. Thank you. And how do you sleep? John Lennon alluded to that Paul's dead room is just, you know, well, you know, those freaks was right when they said you was dead. But did he gave so many interviews and he expounded all the time on different things. Did he ever talk about this in any depth? Like he never said, obviously, because you would have told me that there was a gag to it or they had some awareness.
No, I think they just viewed it as, you know, it's just something that happened in the States, you know, that they weren't behind it. You know, and then, of course, you've got, I mean, it's, you know, as you say, what a great line. Those freaks were right when they said he was dead. You know, to me, I just think, and I know I've had this heated discussion with people. There are some people that believe Paul really is dead and that he was replaced by a fake Paul. And they'll come up to my table at Beatle conventions and are absolutely adamant about it. A film crew from somewhere in Scandinavia interviewed me for about 20 minutes on it. And to my horror, edited my interview and made it sound like I was saying all these clues conclusively proved it, when in fact I was saying just the opposite.
Well, that's what Steve and I were going to do after the show.
Right.
Now if you play it backwards.
Yeah.
I was going to say, my article was true. Believe it.
Right. That's great. You know, so you get some of that. And then there are people that believe the Beatles were behind it. And I really think that is a plausible thing, but I just don't think it is. You know, I mean, once again, I'm reminded of the CEO of Coke that said, "We're not that clever," meaning, you know, that is just so intricate to have done that. You know, and could they have done it? Yeah, they could have. But what do I really believe when push comes to shove? A couple of kids, you know, in college with too much time on their hands and probably a little bit too much dope came up with it, and that's how it got started. And that's what I truly believe.
Well, that sounds reasonable. I just wondered if it all started in and of itself and they just gave it a little nudge, not that they masterminded it, but we have no evidence of that. But did you ever
speak? No, there's no evidence, Fred, they gave it a nudge, but they certainly didn't do much to deny it now, did they?
Well, I guess, like you had said, it was good for sales, which is a good explanation.
Yes.
Did you ever speak to Fred Labor?
Never did, no.
Because that would
I read
be
his writings.
Interesting conversation. Yeah, he's kind of elusive right now. I was trying to pin him down to see if he would give us a quote or something. But I did leave a couple of messages with his management. So if he gets back to me, I'll let you know. And maybe you would want to talk to him for one of your books or something like that.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah. But speaking of your books, could you tell us again a little about the series and where people can find them?
Yes, it's called the Beatles album series, and the titles in the order of publication were Sgt. Pepper. It was called The Beatles and Sgt. Pepper, A Fan's Perspective. And all of the books have the U.S. and British and Canadian perspectives from a historical standpoint of what was going on if you were living in the countries at that time and how you were exposed to the Beatles, which was different for each country, of course. And then what was going on in the world as far as news, what was going on in film, what was going on in music. And then, you know, this middle section of fan recollections were just fans writing in and saying what Sgt. Pepper meant to them. And also bear in mind that musicians are fans too. So in the Sgt. Pepper book, wonderful, you know, stories from Pat Denizio of the Smithereens and Peter Tork of the Monkees, both sadly not with us, and Billy Joel talking about the first time he heard Sgt. Pepper. And so all the books have it. And then the last section of the book is how the covers were done and how the albums were put together, how the songs were written, recorded, and, you know, who played what, that type of stuff. And that's the basic format for the books. I write most of it, but I have people like Pierce Hemmingson write about Canada, Al Sussman, Bill King, both a Beatle fan, Frank Daniels, and then I'll get guest people. Like in the latest book, The Beatles Rubber Soled Revolver, I got David Leaf. I was delighted to get him, the Beach Boys expert, to write about Rubber Soul and the fact that it was the American Rubber Soul that inspired Brian Wilson, not the British Rubber Soul. And so, you know, like that. But anyway, it's Pepper, the White Album and the launch of Apple, the Beatles Get Back to Abbey Road, the Beatles finally, Let It Be, which is a bit of a pun in itself, and then the Beatles Magical Mystery Tour and Yellow Submarine, which those really work well together. The book deals with what I call the Beatles productive post-Pepper period. And, you know, when you read the book, you'll see what I'm talking about. And then, of course, the latest one, the Beatles Rubber Soul to Revolver, which, of course, has to cover Yesterday and Today, which it does, and the Butcher cover. There's a 48-page chapter on the Butcher cover. And once again, like the Paul is Dead thing, it kind of tries to knock down all of the incorrect things about it. It opens up with a paragraph about the Butcher cover. And many, many people, when they read it, will be going, yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, the Beatles wanted to send a message that Capitol butchers the Beatles. And yeah, yeah. And then they did the Yesterday and Today trunk cover, and you can see how disappointed they are that, you know, they didn't get the Butcher cover after all. And, you know, and I tell it like it's true, and then I say, most of what you read above is not true. And then I tell the full story. And that chapter is actually called Mommy Did Capitol Butcher the Beatles, The Truth Behind the Butcher Cover. So there's a lot going on in that book, to put it mildly. And all the books come in a standard hardcover edition, a digital edition, and also a collector's edition, which comes with a cardboard O case and posters and bookmarks and Eric Cash illustrations in some cases and all kind of goodies. And they're signed and numbered, you know, limited editions to 500 each. So in multiple formats. And then there's a publishing company. I self-publish my books, but I cut a deal with the publisher, Imagine and Wonder, and they've done paperback editions of some of the album series books. So a lot of different ways people can get it. And we're also starting to make them available on Kindle. And we're in the process of doing that now.
Well, the book series is wonderful. I love them. I think that they're high quality. The pictures are great. The text is even better. We thank you for being here. And we hope that you come back to talk about the new one in the near future if you want to. And
everybody, I'd be glad to.
We'd love to have you back. And we could talk about when you want to come back on this week. And everybody, if you want the truth, when the show is over, play it backwards and you'll hear what Bruce really thinks. But until then, this is Don't Pass Me By with me, Bob Wilson, our guest, the esteemed Bruce Spicer. Our producer is Steve Roberts on the Shake and Wake Network. And we thank you for being here. And once again, play this show backwards.